Great to have you with us here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're starting the show today by talking with you about maple syrup in Wisconsin. You'll hear how maple syrup farmers are adapting their practices to climate change. And a couple of guests for you. One, Scott Hirschberger. Scott's a forestry communications specialist at UW Extension. Scott, welcome to the show.
Hi there. Great to be with you, Larry.
Well, thanks for joining in. With us as well, Josh Bendorf, a climate outreach specialist at the Wisconsin State Climatology Office. And Josh, good to have you with us.
Happy to be here, Larry.
Scott and Josh have been putting together some resources for maple syrup producers. And if you are a producer, or maybe you're thinking about becoming one, you can find them linked on our website, talk@WPR.org/Larry. So I hope you'll take a look at that as well. If you make your own maple syrup, maybe you could tell us how you've seen it change over the years. Maybe the warmer, the shorter winters are affecting your syrup. Give a call. The number 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to talk@WPR.org. And if you just have it, maybe you're not a producer, but you just have a question about maple syrup, I hope you'll join in as well. Again, 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. Scott, on average, how much maple syrup does Wisconsin produce?
Well, it varies a lot from year to year, but the most recent numbers from the 2025 season, we produced 556,000 gallons of maple syrup here in Wisconsin, which is quite a lot, and that makes us now the third leading state for maple syrup production. For quite a while, we ranked fourth, but just in 2025, we passed Maine, making us third now. We'll see if that holds in 2026, but we like where that trend is heading.
Yeah, and, you know, production is, I was looking at some data over the last decade or so, and I mean our production has like doubled or more than doubled in 10 years.
Yeah, it's gone up a lot. We're seeing a lot more folks being interested in producing maple syrup, whether they're doing it at a small scale or folks who are already doing it at a small scale trying to ramp up their operation, do it more at a commercial scale. And there's plenty of maple trees in the state, too, that still could be tapped that aren't yet. So, you know, a state like Vermont, where there's a long history of this, most of the good maple trees, they're already being tapped. But here in Wisconsin, there's still a pretty big potential for growth.
Yeah, I saw some figure that it was just a very small percentage of the maple trees in the state that are actually being harvested.
Yeah. I believe it's less than 10% currently, yeah.
Yeah. How does UW Extension, how is UW Extension involved with maple syrup production in Wisconsin?
So we really got started with our maple syrup outreach in 2022 through a grant from the USDA, these ACER grants that they give out to support maple syrup production and research. And so we have been developing a lot of resources through that and now are continuing our outreach to maple producers. Now that that grant has ended, we're kind of folding it into our broader outreach around agroforestry and other forestry topics. So we have regular maple hours. These are hour-long webinars that we have. It used to be about a monthly basis. Now, like more frequently during the syruping season, less frequently during the summer. And those cover different topics relevant for maple producers, from sanitation practices, marketing strategies. We have a couple coming up on ticks in the sugar bush and companion crops.
Really cool.
Yeah. And, you know, we do events all around the state to help people connect with maple syrup production and see how they could do it in their own woods. So we'll be at the Wisconsin Maple Syrup Producers Association Winter Institute in Marshfield later this month. So that's a great opportunity to connect with us as well as a lot of other producers and learn all sorts of things. We're actually in the process of getting a tubing system set up at Kemp Natural Resources Station. Mm. And we're going to have a public maple syrup day, I believe in March, most likely, where folks can come and see what that's all about.
That's very, very cool. And I probably can find that on your website, I would guess.
Yes.
What's the website?
Yeah. So right now it's woodlandinfo.org/current-events. That'll take you to all our upcoming events. Or if you just search UW-Madison Extension Forestry Current Events, you should find it as well.
Josh, let me turn to you. You work with the State Climatology Office. Why has your research and attention turned to maple syrup?
Yeah, so the State Climatology Office, we kind of focus on three things with the work that we do: information, interpretation, and investigation. They're kind of the three pillars, as we call them. Information, you know, we have a lot of data that we collect on climate in the state of Wisconsin. You know, we have a whole, decades and decades of climate data that we've collected in the state, and our partners at NOAA have collected. But, you know, interpretation is, what does that climate data mean for folks in Wisconsin? Yeah. How can that data be useful? And, you know, that's what it's great. You know, the State Climatology Office is also part of Extension. So Scott and I are both working for Extension. So it's nice having that, like, all that expertise in Extension, like forestry and agriculture and public health. You know, we can partner with those folks to, you know, help Wisconsinites understand how a changing climate, especially for maple syrup, changes in winter climate is affecting maple syrup growers.
Yeah. Well, tell us more about sugar maple trees. What's an ideal environment for them to grow and produce sweet syrup?
Yeah. Well, sugar maples are present across much of the state, but there's more of them in the northern part of the state. So that's why we've seen more maple syrup production up there. They like kind of moderately moist soils. They don't like super dry soil. They don't like super waterlogged soil. They're shade tolerant, so they can grow in shady conditions, and they really depend on these late winter days where we have nights below freezing and days above freezing around 40 degrees to get the sap flowing. The physiology of maple trees is somewhat unique. Not all trees have this form of sap flow that maples have. So that's why we're able to get maple syrup from maple trees. We're not talking about that for all sorts of different trees. There are a few others. Birch, you can make syrup from as well, but maples are typically what folks use.
Gene wants to know in an email, what is a sugar bush? You hear that term a lot.
So a sugar bush is just the term for the forest or the woods where someone is harvesting maple sap in order to make maple syrup.
Yeah, so you've got an area that is probably primarily maple trees, and that makes it a sugar bush.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not going to be 100% maple trees. In fact, it's going to be a healthier forest if it's not 100% maple trees, if there's at least 25% of other species present as well. But yeah, typically you'll have a lot of maples there. Yep.
Well, Josh, we can observe patterns of extreme weather events, so warming winters and more. Are these things... or what do they have to do? They have to do with climate change. Generally, how has climate change affected maple syrup?
Yeah, so I can talk a little bit about how some of our, like, our winters and springs have changed in Wisconsin. Maybe I'll let Scott fill in some of how that affects maples. But in the state of Wisconsin, since 1950, winters have been the season that have actually warmed the most of the four seasons that we get in Wisconsin, anywhere from about 5 to 6 degrees Fahrenheit compared to the average temperatures that we would get about 75 years ago. And a little bit more so during the overnight hours, a little bit more warming in those overnight lows compared to, like, the daytime highs. And with that, we've seen, like Scott was mentioning, those nights that get below freezing being important for sap flow in maple trees. We've actually been seeing less of those days in Wisconsin with that warming trend that we've been seeing over the last few decades. And with our last spring freezer, the last day that we get below 32 in Wisconsin, that's actually been occurring about 1 to 2 weeks earlier since 1950. So less of those days, and that is getting earlier and earlier.
So that warmer... And probably less snow cover then, too.
Yeah.
That probably has an effect.
Yeah. So maple trees have fairly shallow roots, and so they can be vulnerable to frost damage. So the presence of a snowpack is actually important for insulating and protecting the roots. It prevents the frost from extending too far down into the soil. So a lack of winter snowpack can increase that risk of frost damage to the roots, and it also could mean that there's less moisture to replenish the soil in the spring, which could also be detrimental to the trees. But yeah, with the earlier winter endings, we're seeing an earlier maple syrup season on average. It's been pretty erratic lately, hard to predict, but the trend definitely is moving earlier. You know, it used to be, like, in the southern part of the state, beginning of March would be when the sap would start to flow.
Yeah.
In 2024, some folks were tapping in late January, very beginning of February. So it's been this dramatic shift over time. And the seasons are again, pretty erratic in length, but also trending a little shorter.
Yeah. I was thinking about the trees themselves. The trees would, I would think then, start to bloom earlier as well.
Yeah. So coming out of dormancy, the temperature is an important factor for telling the trees, hey, it's time to wake up, time for the buds to expand, time to send out flowers and leaves. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if I could just add one point to that, we can have, you know, earlier bloom in trees as the temperatures are warming in the winter and spring months, but that doesn't mean we're out of the woods for having like a late season frost event. This is something particularly detrimental to like orchards. If we can have like, if we have a warm March and a warm April, things start to come alive, but then we have a cold snap come May, a warming climate doesn't necessarily mean we're out of the woods for events like that. So something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. Kathleen in Madison has a comment. Let's go there. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. I've been for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years doing some syruping in just a little local woodlot that is mostly just scrubby stuff and box elder trees. And so I've been tapping those box elders. And I just live in an apartment, so I've just been boiling it down on a hot plate out on the fire escape. And we've made some, you know, a couple gallons a year, just some awesome syrup. Everybody loves our syrup because that box elder is just really, really good tasting. And I don't really like regular maple syrup, but I love this stuff.
That's very cool. Yeah, thanks for sharing that story.
Yeah, maybe you could talk about the process quickly. Give us the rundown on what happens.
Absolutely. Yeah, so when the sap comes out of the trees, it's about 2 to 2.5% sugar on average. And finished syrup has to be at least 66% sugar, up to 66.9%. So you're actually boiling and boiling and boiling in order to remove more than 98 to 99% of the water. So it's a very time and labor intensive process, but you collect the sap. You know, folks doing it at a small scale are probably using bags or buckets hung directly to the trees. Then you've got to transport that into the place where you're going to boil it. And some folks just directly start boiling it there. A wood-fired stove outside is a pretty common setup for a beginning producer or a small-scale producer. Folks doing it at a larger scale will have a whole sugar house where they've got a fancy evaporator set up and a good way to dissipate the steam and the moisture into the air. And also folks who are doing it more commercially will tend to use reverse osmosis. So this is the same technology you can use to filter water to make it safer to drink. You can also use it to filter syrup, or the sap, I should say, and take it from that 2 to 2.5% all the way up to maybe 8 to 20% sugar by weight. And so then you're able to rapidly speed up the boiling process. But it takes hours to boil, and you have to do it fairly immediately because the sap can spoil if you just leave it outside and don't process it.
I was talking to a guy who has a pretty good size sugar bush, and I said, well, how do you judge? He said, I can judge how productive we've been by the number of cases of beer that we have to go through during the season, because there's a lot of volunteer help that kind of goes along with
Absolutely. Yeah, it can be a whole family or community endeavor for sure. And just to build on that point about box elder trees, sugar maples are, unsurprisingly, the tree that's most commonly used to make maple syrup. It's the state tree of Wisconsin. It's one of our most common forest trees as well. But you can use any species of maple to make maple syrup. And so the caller was using box elder trees, which are a species of maple. And you know, one thing that we're seeing with climate change is an expansion in the types of trees, the types of maple trees that folks are using. So red maples are another species that historically some producers have been a little reluctant to use, but now new research is emerging that shows actually they can be just as good for making maple syrup as sugar maples in terms of the sugar content and the quality of the syrup that you get. And so more folks are incorporating red maples into their sugar bushes, especially because those red maples are more versatile in terms of their tolerance for moisture conditions, the types of habitats they can live in, more tolerant of that than sugar maples. So we're going to see an increased importance of red maples for maple syrup in the coming decades.
Scott Hirschberger, Forest Communication Specialist at UW Extension. Josh Bendorf, Climate Outreach Specialist in the Wisconsin State Climatology Office, our guest today as we take a look at maple trees and maple syrup with our two guests. And you can join in, too. Question or comment, I hope you will. The number is 800 642-1234 or email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at maple syrup on the program today and looking a bit at climate change and how it is affecting in one way or another our maple syrup production in the state. Scott Hershberger, Josh Bendorf, our guests. And you can join in. The number's 800-642-1234. You could email to talk@WPR.org. Trisha emailed us, how should we store unopened bottles of syrup? And is refrigeration storage necessary once a bottle is open? Scott, do you want to take that?
Sure. Yeah, so unopened syrup, if it's been properly hot packed, it is shelf stable. You don't need to refrigerate it until you open it. That high concentration of sugar actually prevents the growth of microbes inside. Once you open it, you do want to refrigerate it because there will be some slow growth of microbes, especially, you know, like around the edge of the bottle.
Yeah.
But it lasts a really long time in the fridge once you open it.
Tricia was also wondering, how long can we store the unopened syrup?
I don't have a specific number on that, but a long time, like
years.
Yeah,
years we're talking about here. Okay. And JP in Bluff Siding is on the phone with us. JP, what's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. Good morning. I just wanted to, this is my one of my favorite subjects. It's the best time of spring. It leads to the beginning of foraging season. But my family has been tapping trees for a while, and one time we got too much, and we actually learned how to ferment the maple syrup. It's not technically mead, but it's called astringent, I believe is how it's pronounced. And with your boiling, you boil it down to the sugar level you want, but instead of going all the way to syrup, you just make it to the sugar content and then ferment it, and it makes a delectable bottle of wine to share with family and friends.
Very cool. Josh, have you ever done that?
Can't say I have.
Yeah, that's really creative. I love that. You know, the more creative folks can be with maple products, the better, because it is really such a versatile raw ingredient and can be prepared into lots of great value-added products. So that's really cool that you're doing that.
Yeah, we were talking before the show started. I have several different kinds of maple syrup at home. One that I have is a bourbon infused, and I was thinking of, you know, putting that on a roast, you know, the bourbon and the meat would probably be well. But there are other, I mean, ginger, there's ways to make it spicy.
Yeah, cardamom infused, cinnamon infused, coffee infused, fermented garlic infused. I've had all of those. They've all been tasty. Yeah, it's a very versatile cooking ingredient for, like, savory sauces as well. And that actually does tie into one of the things that producers are doing to adapt to the changing climate, is expanding the range of products that they're making. Because with a lot of those value-added products, you can get a higher income, like per unit of sap or syrup that you're producing, potentially. And so expanding that product range is a way of, like, you know, diversifying your revenue sources, essentially.
And when you think about maple syrup, I mean, my mind goes immediately to pancakes. But this is a way to expand how you, you know, something other than pancakes.
Mm-hmm.
And that obviously leads to more use, consumption of maple syrup. I don't think there are any, I couldn't find any information on consumption of maple syrup. At least when it came to Wisconsin, there was no, in fact, online, it just said, well, we just don't have a way to measure it.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know any numbers for that either. But I do know, you know, we're still importing a lot of syrup from Vermont and Canada. So even if we have really increased production among Wisconsin producers, there's going to be a market for it here in the state.
Mark in Appleton has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Mark.
Hey, hi, Larry. Hey, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Great subject matter. We've been maple syruping for about the last 6 years. And the property I tap also has a number of beech trees, and I've been tempted to do beech. What are your thoughts on that?
What do you think, Scott?
To clarify, you're saying beech, not birch?
Beech.
Yeah. I don't know anything about that. I can't remember offhand if that's even possible, because most deciduous trees don't have a sap flow the way that maples do, maples and birches, that would allow you to make, like, collect it in that way and make syrup. I can't remember offhand if beeches are in that category or not.
They're not part of the maple.
They're somewhat related, but they're not a type of maple, no.
Yeah, well, Mark, I suppose you could tap one and just see what happens. why not?
I mean, yeah, I would do further research on that, because, like, oaks, for example, if you try to tap an oak, nothing happens. Like, you don't get any sap out at all. So,
okay. Mark, there you go. Thank you so much. Reed emailed us. He plans to make his own maple syrup this year from a few trees in the town of Blanchardville that he has permission to tap. Mm-hmm. Reed also hopes to make syrup from a black walnut tree, and he's never done this before, but he's gotten some from a friend, and he says it was from a black walnut tree, and it was delicious.
Yeah. Yeah, black walnut is another one that you can tap and make syrup with. And the thing with both black walnut and birch syrup is that the sap comes out of the tree at a much lower sugar concentration than maple sap does. So you're going to have to boil it for longer, and it's probably worth investing in a reverse osmosis setup if you're going to be doing that, just to cut down on the boiling time. But yeah, those are delicious as well.
Well, you wonder if trees like black walnut could become an alternative as the sugar maples range moves north. I mean, over a long time period there, Josh.
Yeah, and like, you know, Scott's been saying, you know, there's different trees that, you know, producers can tap, you know, and as our climate is warming, you know, we're seeing those, you know, favorable ranges shift further and further to the north. So I think any ways that producers can find value-added products and ways to be, you know, flexible, think outside the box, highly encourage that.
Yeah, and it's also worth noting that we're comfortably within the sugar maple range here in Wisconsin, so mm-hmm. producers don't have to worry about sugar maples disappearing from the landscape in the coming decades. We're going to have maples and going to still be able to tap them. Where producers need to be more concerned about that is at the southern end of the range, like in West Virginia. That's becoming a major issue in terms of not even having the right winter conditions for the sap, good sap flow. But here we're going to have sugar maples for the foreseeable future.
For a long time. Well, as you mentioned that, I was thinking about moisture and precipitation, rain. I mean, now we're getting periods where we get deluged with rain, and then we might have a drought later on. Mm-hmm. What's the effect of that, Josh?
Yeah, I can speak a little bit to how some of the changes we've been seeing in precipitation. It's definitely becoming more erratic. We've kind of been using the term weather whiplash a little bit in the presentations that the state climatology office has been giving. What we've been noticing over the last several decades is that a substantially higher fraction of our annual precipitation coming during these high impact rainfall events. So things are trending a little bit wetter across seasons, but we're seeing a lot more in those kind of heavy all at once type mm-hmm. rainfall events, but then shifting back to drought. You know, even though we've been trending wetter in the state, we still get years like a few of the last couple of years, like 2023 and 2021, where we did have some instance of severe drought in the state of Wisconsin. So there's a lot of that back and forth going on. And then with winters, you know, we've also been noticing that winters have been trending wetter over the last several decades. You know, some of that might be snowfall, but some of it might be shifting more towards liquid rainfall with warmer temperatures if temperatures are above freezing. So you might be getting maybe, you know, a little bit more snowfall and a little bit more rainfall kind of combined. But like Scott said, snow might not stick around as long when we do get it, especially if our soils are not frozen.
Well, I'm wondering, you know, we haven't talked much about summer, and summers are getting hotter, aren't they? Or are they?
Yeah, so summers are a little bit more interesting. They are getting warmer, but we've really been noticing a lot of that trend happening in the overnight hours. So, and since about that same time, 1950, high temperatures in the state of Wisconsin have only gone up maybe about by around a degree. That varies from county to county, but we've seen about a 2 or 3 degree warming in the nighttime temperatures.
Oh.
So the nights are trending a little bit warmer, but maybe we're not getting as more, maybe, you know, our those really hot days that we have in the 90s, we're not seeing maybe a substantial increase in those. But that, with projections for like, you know, 20, 30 years from now, we may see an uptick in those like 90 degree plus best days. And like we talked about before, that precipitation ping pong, those really high impact rainfall events, they're most likely to happen during the summer months. We have like thunderstorms, things like that, as well as drought. If we go, you know, week or two without any rainfall, you know, the moisture demand of the atmosphere is a lot higher during that time, so we can get into drought much quicker as well.
Yeah. Karen in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I actually have, well, two or three questions. Okay. Number one, first, I did not hear this last part because I was calling in. And so I understand that we're kind of in a drought right now. That's one thing. Number two is, how do you encourage people to have diversity in tree plantings and actually preserving tree plantings, because I understand that that's part of the health and also the health of the planet. And something that always bothers me when I hear people talking about, this is the third thing, talking about climate change and its effects on products is, you know, are trees dependent on bees? Because cell phones and all our technology affects bees. And so it's just like, I just feel a gut punch when I hear people talking about climate change as if ho-hum, rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic instead of, you know, dealing with these. So if you could speak to that, because then, you know, if they're not affected by bees, I mean by technology, then I'll put that away and I won't worry about it. But you're a climate specialist, and I understand that it is. And we, I mean, the whole, we're all under assault. We should behave as if we're under assault.
All right. Well, Josh?
Yeah, I'll maybe take the first shot at this and maybe let Scott fill in some more about the trees. But yeah, your caller is exactly right. We do have some areas of the state that are in drought right now, some moderate, severe level drought up in the northern part of the state and some of far southern Wisconsin as well. A lot of that is carryover from a dry fall that we had this year. So it was a little bit more of a drier fall that we experienced. And then during the winter months, a lot of that will not be alleviated as much, because winter is climatologically our driest season. But come spring, you know, if we do get a little bit more precipitation and that moisture from the snow that's on the ground gets into the soil, some of that drought will hopefully be alleviated. As far as pollinators are concerned, yeah, I mean, that's, climate does have an effect on some of our native pollinator populations. And one of my previous jobs, I was actually working in habitat restoration with pheasants forever. And I do want to encourage folks that if you're thinking of creating beneficial space for pollinators on your property, there are definitely ways that you can do that in our current climate.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to speak about the diversity of tree species, I love that question. That's a super important point. The analogy that I like to make is that a forest is kind of like a sports team. You know, you have your point guard, you have your defense, you have your offense. Mm-hmm. Every species has a different specialty, and they're stronger when they're all together. So a monoculture of maples is not going to be as healthy as a diverse maple forest with lots of, you know, trilliums and other wildflowers in the understory, a mixed composition in terms of the sizes and spacing of trees as well. You want young trees, you want middle-aged trees, you want old trees. All of that is really important. So we do encourage producers, like, although it's tempting to try to really just encourage the maples, your maples are going to be healthier if you make sure you're cultivating some other trees in that landscape as well. And if you're planning a planting on your land, maybe you're doing some reforestation of old farmland or other land, don't just plant a monoculture, plant a variety of species. So I'll plug the DNR's tree planting guide. If you Google DNR tree planting plan, you can fill out a form and get like a customized plan for how to do a tree planting on your land that'll take those benefits into account. And you can also order seedlings from the DNR as well as other sources this winter to be ready to plant in the spring. As for pollinators, I believe maples are mostly wind pollinated, but there certainly are other trees that do depend on pollinators to be pollinated. So definitely it is, you know, something important to consider that all of these systems, the maples, the maple syrup, all the other trees, the other plants, the insects, they're all part of an ecosystem, and the health of the ecosystem determines the health of the trees. And so that's why I really want to emphasize that you know, we don't have to experience climate change passively. There are lots of things we can do proactively to cultivate a healthy woodland ecosystem, managing invasive species, for example, trying to remove buckthorn and honeysuckle and garlic mustard, really looking proactively at which trees are doing well and which are less healthy, and then working with a forester to think about how do we maybe thin the forest to give the healthiest trees the best chance at survival. You know, leaving some snags, standing deadwood, fallen deadwood for wildlife habitat, all those sorts of things are really beneficial and things that people can actively be doing on the land. And all of that benefits maple syrup, because the healthier the trees are, the more syrup and the higher concentration of sap, better quality that you're going to be getting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about, and you sort of started to get at it, with the climate change, we've got suddenly, well, not suddenly, but over time, we've had invasive weeds, as you mentioned, and bushes like buckthorn, invasive insects, mm-hmm. and diseases that we never had before.
Yeah.
In terms of the maple trees, which are probably the most deleterious effect.
Well, it's hard to predict into the future. There could be new pests and diseases that arrive that we haven't seen in Wisconsin before, or maybe that we haven't even seen in North America before. So it's really a matter of anything that affects the trees and puts stress on the trees is going to cascade on itself. So if there's a drought that stresses the trees, then maybe a spongy moth outbreak would be more damaging to the trees than it would have been without the drought. Or if there's a spongy moth outbreak and there's a new disease that arrives, like those things together might hurt the trees more than individually they would. So really it's about, you know, in terms of preventing invasive species from spreading, you want to be really proactive about cleaning your equipment, cleaning off your boots, you know, power washing the undercarriage of your truck before going from one woods to another, because humans are a primary factor contributing to the spread of invasive species. But we can all take those steps every day to really prevent and slow their spread so that our forests have time to deal with these changes.
One we haven't talked about, which comes up a lot on this program, are the deer population in the state. And that's certainly rising, seem to be rising in the Midwest. And do deer like maple tree, young maple
yes.
trees?
Yes, they do. And so this is one of those kind of like cascading effects of climate change where deer benefit from warmer winters. It makes them easier to survive the winter. And so then they have increased populations the rest of the year. And deer do browse fairly selectively on different trees and shrubs. And that has a really dramatic impact on the species that can succeed in our forest. So that's something that's of broad concern, and it does affect maples. Maples are a group of trees that deer do like to munch on. And so, you know, things that producers can do if they want to make sure that they have maple syrup decades into the future, that those baby sugar maples can become mature trees. So you want to think about how to prevent deer from eating them. So you might physically build a fence and an exclosure to keep the deer out. If you're doing a timber harvest on your land, you can leave some of the slash or that top material that isn't going to be actually harvested. You could leave that and kind of create a pile as a physical barrier. That also can create wildlife habitat for smaller critters at the same time. So that's a win-win. Or encourage hunting in your sugar bush. That's another way to help control deer populations and minimize the impact to maples.
And I was thinking about the, you know, in a normal forest, a tree falls down, it dies, and it is providing nutrition, if I'm not mistaken,
yes,
for the rest of the forest to maintain it.
Yeah, it does. And so both standing deadwood and fallen deadwood are important for that nutrient cycling, for the overall health of the forest.
So in terms of management, how can I think we've kind of gotten into this, but how can practicing forestry management help your sugar bush?
So, yeah, in several ways, you know, I think a big one is thinking about making sure the healthiest trees have the best chance of continuing to be healthy and thrive. And so that might look like thinning some of the diseased or less healthy or the crowded trees to make room, because sugar maples are shade tolerant, but they're still going to grow faster and more vigorously if there's more open space, there's more light reaching them. But I do want to touch on some of the things in terms of actual production of maple syrup that producers can and are doing as well to adapt. You know, a big one is just increasing energy efficiency, because one of the biggest costs that producers face is the cost of fuel, whether that's wood or anything else, to do the boiling. And so reverse osmosis is something that really drastically cuts down on energy usage and thus cost over time. Things like using a preheater. So this is a way of using the steam produced by the evaporation to actually heat the incoming sap before it goes into the evaporator. Oh. So that increases energy efficiency as well. You know, I mentioned the value-added products and being ready to tap earlier in the season. As we mentioned, seasons are getting earlier, so it's really important to be prepared for that. And another thing is sanitation practices. So there is microbial buildup over the course of the season in the spouts and in the tubing system if you're using tubing. And being really proactive about cleaning that equipment is important and really drastically increases your yield. So that's going to make it pan out better financially. I'll plug the North American Maple Syrup Producers Manual. Has really detailed, excellent information on proper sanitation for maple producers. So that's something important to think about.
Yeah. If I could just jump in real quick here, Larry, one last point. Think about, you know, the health of your soils as well in your forests and on your land. You know, as we're talking about like more erratic precipitation, how is that water going to be able to infiltrate into soil? We want soils with good structure. If it's compacted, doesn't have good structure, that we're more likely to see runoff. That moisture won't be going into your soil. And then conversely, when we have a drought, it won't hold on to the moisture as long. So it's thinking about being more resilient, having healthy soils with good structure is a great way to help kind of weather the storm, if you will, against some of these precipitation extremes.
Yeah. And so, you know, you're asking us what resources we have for producers. Well, a lot of what I've been sharing today is from an adaptation guide that I created a couple years ago. If you go to maple.extension.wisc.edu/adaptation-menu, you'll find it. It's called Adapting to Changes in Your Sugar Bush. Mm-hmm. So it covers all these changes as well as those forestry practices and syrup production practices that can help you be resilient.
And it's linked to our website. So that information that Scott just mentioned is linked to our website. So if you go to talk@wpr.org/Larry and then go to today's date, you'll find a link on our website to that information. That might be easier
for folks to remember.
Right off the top. Scott, Josh, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you both very much for being with us today, and hope we can do this again down the road.
Absolutely. Thank you, Larry.
Yeah, thank you so much. Feel free to reach out with more questions.
Scott Hershberger, Forestry Communications Specialist for UW Extension. Josh Bendorf, also connected with UW Extension, is a climate outreach specialist in the Wisconsin State Climatology Office. I learned a lot, and I hope you did as well. Coming up, we're going to take a look. You know, we're eating maple syrup, and that's part of maybe of your diet. It's part of my diet, I guess, in so many ways. And we're going to be talking with a registered dietitian next about eating well in the new year. We'll cover how much protein, for example, you need each day, and of course, a whole lot more. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.